Welcome to the official podcast of the Hoffeld Group. Your host is the CEO and Chief Sales Trainer of the Hoffeld Group, David Hoffeld.
Welcome to the official podcast of the Hoffeld Group, where we provide you with powerful sales insights that are based upon proven science and will help you sell more. I'm your host, the CEO and Chief Sales Trainer at the Hoffeld Group, David Hoffeld.
And today we have a very special guest, Frank Cespedes. Frank is a senior lecturer at Harvard Business School. He has run a successful business, served on boards of established corporations as well as startups, and consulted to companies around the world. He's the author of 6 books, with his newest being Aligning Strategy and Sales. Frank, it's great to have you with us today.
David, it's my pleasure to be with you, and I say that not only because obviously that's the sort of thing you're supposed to say at the beginning of sessions like this, but in this case, I truly mean it. I like and admire the kind of work you do at the Hoffeld Group, the basis that you have in good behavioral research.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And I must also confess that I am particularly excited about our conversation because when I was at Harvard, Frank was a big influence on me. And if you are in sales leadership, Frank is one of those few people whose insights you just can't ignore. So let's get right into it. Frank, I want to ask you, first of all, about your new book, Aligning Strategy and Sales. What was it that inspired you to write that book?
Well, my academic research always focused on go-to-market topics, including channels and sales management. Then I left academia and ran a business for 12 years, and doing that, obviously, I had to meet payroll and actually sell. Then after getting lucky in business and returning to academia, I taught strategy for a few years and was frankly surprised by what I saw. Despite decades of attention to that topic, there is remarkably little written about how to link strategy with the nitty-gritty of field execution, especially sales. In fact, if the gods of strategy even mention sales, it's typically advice from a fortune cookie, you know, get incentives right, work as a team. In other words, do good and avoid evil. Conversely, there's a vast literature, as you know, about selling. Much of it is anecdotal, but some of it is in fact grounded in good research. But that advice is often misleading in a different way because the selling methodology folks treat sales in isolation from strategy. And the result is often that sales training can have a perverse effect. People work harder, but not necessarily smarter. And the reality is that selling, no matter how clever and creative, simply cannot generate sustained returns if it's not linked to good strategy. Now, that may sound obvious, but it has not been discussed actionably. And that was the basic motivation for writing the book.
And that is an important takeaway from your book and from a lot of your work, is that linking of strategy and selling. And I guess that brings up another question, which is regarding strategy. Often leaders create strategies that are based on, how do I put it, overly optimistic forecasts. So what steps can leaders take to begin to create strategies that are both challenging but also achievable?
Well, first of all, you are correct when you talk about overly optimistic forecasts. In fact, if listeners to this podcast do get a copy of my book, they'll see the data there. On average, what the research tells us is that firms only deliver about 50 to 60% of the financial performance that their strategies and sales forecasts promise. Now, that's a lot of wasted money and effort, and if you've ever wondered why investment bankers and other investors tend to be a cynical bunch, that data tells you why. They are regularly listening to executives and companies that overpromise and underdeliver. Now, how do you get better at this? How do you make forecasting better? There's a whole bunch of biases that, David, you're very, very well familiar with. There tend to be personal biases, and you do your best to manage them. At the organizational level, however, I would point to two things. On the strategy side, the planning process. Strategic planning in most firms unwittingly generates a disconnect that leads to these unreal forecasts. What the research tells us is that about two-thirds of companies treat strategic planning as an annual event, usually as part of the annual capital budgeting process. The research also tells us that, at least in corporations, the average planning process now takes an estimated 4 to 5 months per year, you know, anywhere from a third to a half of the year. Now, while that is going on, the market is obviously doing what the market will do, and sales must respond issue by issue and account by account. In other words, even if the output of planning is a great strategy, and clearly that's a big if, the process itself often makes it irrelevant to sales executives. So the first thing to look at is the planning process. Is it realistic? Is it working in market time, not company time? On the sales side, I think the single biggest lever for dealing with those forecasts is the account management review process. And here we've got a lot of room for improvement in most companies. I was shocked when I first started working with companies at how sloppy account reviews are in most companies. You know, if the salesperson does a good job, if the numbers are there, you know, they get a pat on the back, maybe the compensation system recognizes that. And if it's a bad job, they get yelled at in one way or another. One of the things I typically suggest to companies is, if they're not familiar with it already, become familiar with what military organizations call the after-action review process. It's a very simple process. It's systematic. I think anyone in sales who reads any article about a so-called AAR, after-action review, will immediately see its applicability to account reviews and what in sales we call win-loss analyses. That, it seems to me, is the other area to work on to get better at making forecasts that are achievable, stretch, but also realistic.
That's great. I guess maybe let's look at the other side then of the coin, because a lot of our listeners are sales leaders, and there is that disconnect between they create a strategy and the execution of the strategy. So what advice do you have for sales leaders about this topic? Specifically, how can they begin to articulate strategy to their salespeople, again, in a way that's understandable, but also inspires action?
Well, that in fact is the core topic in one of the chapters of my book, Communicating Strategy. The first thing I would say about that is, do not be afraid to communicate your firm's strategy and articulate it to salespeople. Now, again, that may sound counterintuitive, but the data, which, you know, you can see in the book, most firms are horrendous at this. Just one data point. There's a firm in Europe called Effectory. They're basically the European version of the Gallup organization. And over the years, they've done an annual survey and amassed a terrific database. They get about 300,000 respondents annually. That's a pretty good size N. And one of the questions they ask every year of the employees that fill out these surveys from companies around the world is, do you understand your firm's strategy? Fair question. What the Effectory data tells us regularly is that less than 50% of employees say, yes, I do understand my firm's strategy. More than 50% are essentially saying, I don't have a clue. But here's the really perverse part about these results. The closer you get to the customer, in other words, when you look at the responses from people in sales and service, the percentage of employees who say they understand their firm strategy goes down. Now, obviously, it's very difficult to execute something that one doesn't understand, but that is the empirical reality. Now, if you ask executives how come you don't do a better job articulating and communicating your strategy to your people, by far the most typical rationale is, well, we don't want our competitors to find out about it. And to that I would say to executives who say that, you know, you've got a much, much bigger problem than competitors understanding your strategy if your people don't understand it and can't execute it. So the first comment I would make is don't be afraid to articulate it. That's where you start. The second, and again, for details, I would direct our listeners to the chapter in my book, but I think there's a very, very practical and simple way to do this. Any strategy worthy of the name has three components: objectives, scope, advantage. Objectives, what is it that we're out to achieve? What are the milestones for that? How do we quantify it? Scope, where does this strategy apply? Where does it not apply? Who are our customers? Who are not our customers, for example? And then advantage. What is it that's embedded in our value proposition that allows us to have an advantage in those areas where we choose to play? And again, for the details of that, I'd recommend the chapter in the book. But essentially, and what you'll see there are some examples, essentially this is something that companies that do have a coherent strategy can communicate to their people in 50 words or less. And that's important because, as you know, the scarce resource in most sales organizations is time. That's the way I would begin to deal with the topic you've just raised, David.
As you've written so eloquently, you know, aligning strategy and sales is not a one-time event. It's an ongoing process. So how can sales leaders keep sales tasks on point with strategy over the long haul?
Well, the basic idea is this. I start from the following assumption, which I think is a pretty darn good assumption. In any business, value is created or destroyed in the marketplace with customers. Mm-hmm. It's not created in internal meetings. It can only be created or destroyed with customers, which, by the way, is why sales is always a strategy issue, not simply a tactical field issue. Now, yes. The market includes the industry that the company competes in, the customer segments where you choose to play, that scope part of strategy, and the buying processes at customers that you do sell and service. Those factors, those external factors, should inform strategy and the required sales tasks. And by required sales tasks, I mean, what is it that salespeople must be good at to execute your company strategy and not those of a generic selling methodology, for example? Then the issue is aligning actual selling behaviors with those tasks. And managers basically have three levers to do that. The first, as always, is people, who they are, what they know, how you hire and develop their skills so that they can execute those tasks. The second lever is what I call control systems, performance management systems, including sales compensation and the metrics that one uses to measure selling effectiveness. And then the third lever is what I call sales environment, the larger company context in which sales initiatives get developed and executed, how communication works or doesn't work across the boundaries of your organization, and ultimately how sales managers, not just salespeople, get selected and developed. And ultimately, selling effectiveness is an outcome of these factors, not only the result of heroic efforts in the field. And I think this has very practical implications. If you're a sales manager, this way of thinking may change how you select and use available selling resources, how you develop your people, and frankly, how you look at your own career and development needs. And if you're a CEO or a board member evaluating sales numbers, frankly, it can help you to avoid being a sucker for glib generalizations about selling. And believe me, as someone who works with private equity firms and has served on boards, that can happen. People that have fundamentally a financial background, not a sales background, can very easily be suckers for glib generalizations about selling.
Absolutely. And I think that is some powerful takeaways for our listeners right there, because oftentimes you're spot on. We think about sales from a purely tactical view, and we're ignoring the strategy of a company. There's often that huge disconnect to everyone's disadvantage. So I think for our listeners, that's an important thing to take away and think and evaluate your mindset on that, because I think Frank just laid out a powerful framework for thinking rightly about sales. But I want to focus in on one of those levers that you mentioned, and that is sales compensation, because that is a daunting but very important topic in selling, particularly for using it to merge strategy and sales. So can you maybe speak specifically to that regarding how can sales leaders begin to think about sales compensation from that strategic perspective?
Well, again, David, I think you're exactly right. That is a complex topic. I've got an entire chapter about that in the book. The devil is in the details with compensation. But in answer to your question, I'd say three things. The first is this. Do not confuse sales compensation with sales management. And many, many sales leaders and companies do. You hear all this jargon and, frankly, nonsense about so-called coin-operated sales forces. Sales compensation is a vital, vital driver of selling behavior. But you've got to think about it ultimately as a necessary but not sufficient cause of getting the behaviors that you want from your people. If your compensation is out of whack with your objectives, the odds of you achieving what you want to achieve are very low. But even if they are aligned, there's all the other areas of management, behavior, etc. Second comment I would make about this is that for many firms, it's not just about volume. The data I'm about to cite has been remarkably consistent throughout my career, and it stays the same. If you look at the surveys about sales compensation, just about 70% of firms, 2 out of 3, their sales compensation framework is very simple. It's based on volume. A salesperson sells more, they get paid more up to a limit. But it's based on volume irrespective of the profitability of that sale, irrespective of the cost to serve those customers, irrespective of the different profit margins, for example, embedded in the product line. And for many firms, that standard compensation approach simply does not make financial sense. So again, for many firms, it's not just about volume, and that's the second thing to look at in compensation. And then the third is aligned with what I just said, is sort of the basic idea here. Ultimately, compensation is about behavior. And as a result, it's about the behaviors you want and need that are aligned with your company strategy. So compensation ultimately has to focus on those tasks and those behaviors. And again, I say this sincerely, that's one of the things I think is so is good about what you're doing at the Hoffeld Group. Because unlike a lot of other folks that focus on sales, you're focused on those behaviors and the behavioral research that is relevant, and that is also a key principle in compensation.
Well, there's, again, so many takeaways there, because sales compensation is such a misunderstood, but that was a great synopsis of the right way to think about it. And as you mentioned, that is in your book as well. And I rarely recommend sales books for a variety of reasons, but Frank's book, Aligning Strategy and Sales, In fact, I pre-ordered that book, and I have read it numerous times because it is action-packed with insights that if you're a sales leader or you aspire to be a leader or you're a business leader who wants to make sure your strategies and sales are aligned, this is a must-read. It is something you need to have. Frank, I want to maybe switch our topic a little bit and focus on something that we specialize here in. I know you have some strong insights on as well, and that is sales training. You know, one thing we focus on is that a key part of any sales training is really making sure that the training equips salespeople to competently perform the tasks that are aligned with the strategy that's actually driving that training initiative. So what are some things that you would recommend that leaders think through prior to training to ensure that the training will accomplish the desired goals?
Well, you know, I always, when it comes to training in sales or in other areas of business, I always like to quote what I'm told is associated with training in the U.S. Air Force for pilots. They talk there about the so-called 8 P's, and the 8 P's are proper prior planning and preparation prevents piss poor performance, and I think that's exactly right. I think there are three key things in sales training in particular. The first is customization. Now, there are certain things that are what I'll call off-the-shelf training, listening, et cetera, that I think are applicable to many, many sales situations. But again, even within the same industry, because of issues like strategy, the customers we call on, sales tasks differ from one company to the next. So customizing training to your particular goals and initiatives is typically essential. The second is, what do we know about how adults learn? What we know is that most adult learning is experiential learning. To use the current jargon, it tends to be action learning, not classroom learning, the professor said with some regret, but it's true. And experiential learning, as you know, at the Hoffeld Group, has to be based on behaviors, not simply attitudes. And then the third area, which is outrageously neglected by many sales managers, is follow-up. The research about training, I think, here is pretty definitive. What happens after the training event is typically at least as important as what happens during the training event. And for too many sales organizations, what happens after the training event is basically nothing. There is no follow-up. So again, whether it's after-action reviews or win-loss analyses or performance reviews, follow-up is essential. And this is an area, by the way, where technology is making it easier and more cost-effective for sales managers to follow up in a timely manner. And frankly, there's less and less excuse not to do that.
Those are some great insights. And, you know, Frank, you've given our listeners so many really thought-provoking and practical and actionable ideas here today. If our listeners want to learn more about you and your work, where could they go?
Well, I mean, you know, they can look at the book that you've been so generously describing, David, and I do appreciate that. But the book is called Aligning Strategy and Sales, The Choices, Systems, and Behaviors That Drive Effective Selling. It's Harvard Business Review Press, but, you know, it's available on Amazon. And then I do have a website, frankcespedes.com, and, you know, that website has various articles I've published on the topic, some excerpts from speeches and things like that. So those would be the two areas that I would suggest.
Excellent. Well, yeah, definitely, as we've talked about already, you want to, if you're a sales leader, you need to go get Frank's book, and his website has a wealth of resources as well that, again, I would highly recommend. So special thanks to our guest, Frank Cespedes, for sharing really some fascinating and very actionable insights with us. And join us here next time on the Hoffeld Group podcast. And remember, selling is just too important to be based on anything other than proven science.